thank the organizer for inviting me for this conference and giving the possibility to give a talk. Here I'm going to discuss the challenge to deliver high accuracy on large computer simulations. And first of all, I would like to try to contextualize what I mean with high accuracy and computer simulation. So like the kind of system I'm interested in and the kind of results that I aim at achieving. I mostly work on applications of chemical physics, and many times the simulations that I have to do are to provide the molecular level understanding of what happens in processes or in some systems. And so here I just selected three examples, three experiments, where what they see is very interesting, and also the impact of the works can be very big. So they are interesting both at the scientific and technological point of view, but the understanding of what's happening at the molecular level is challenging, and it is required to be obtained using computer simulation. On the left, you see a picture from a paper where they measure the very anomalously low dielectric constant on confined water. And essentially, they do not know what is the structure of the water that is confined and gives this property. In the middle here, you see essentially a realization of a filter for water, to clean water, obtained using graphene oxid membranes. And on the right, you see an experiment where the picture from an experiment where they have measured the flow of water molecules on carbon nanotubes, and they have observed that it is extremely fast, unexpectedly fast. In all these cases, you can guess that there are technological applications, but also if you don't understand what's really happening there, it's difficult to do these applications. So computer simulations can help in that, but you often end up in having to simulate very big systems. Where big, with big, I mean that there would be maybe thousands of atoms. And sometimes you are interested in how the system evolves in time. So you need to do molecular dynamic simulation and generate millions of frames and see how the system evolves. So this is a challenge to deal with the big simulation. But the other is also the accuracy of your modeling of the interaction between the atoms, because like, even if you afford to do the simulation with something, the method that where the modeling is not good, you will end up having unreliable results, and so you do not gain insight. So having something cheap and accurate is a big challenge. And here I want to go a little bit further and show you what's the kind of accuracy that we need to be able to be reliable. I taken a system that is one of the systems where I'm interested, water on graphene, and if we have a question as simple as what is the contact angle of a water droplet on graphene, and we want to answer to this question using theoretical computational methods, what we do is we put some few thousand waters on top of graphene sheet, and we model the interaction between waters and themselves and water with the graphene layer, and we evolve in time, and then we measure the contact angle. So the interaction between waters is quite well known, especially because there are properties that you can look at and see if you predict correctly, like the radial distribution function or the polymorphs of ice. But instead, it's quite tricky to tell what is the interaction between water and graphene. And your lack of knowledge in this interaction can lead to like very different results. So say in this figure, I'm reporting essentially a binding curve. That means I'm reporting the interaction energy of a water taken from here and the graphene. So the interaction is reported as a function of the distance. So as short distance, you have repulsion. At a long distance, you go to zero because there is no interaction. And at some point, you have a minimum. The value of the interaction at the minimum is usually referred as the absorption energy, or the binding energy, or the interaction energy. So it tells how strong is the binding. And say that we are ignorant and we don't know what is the binding energy. So we do three different simulations where we consider in each simulation a different binding curve. One has a binding energy of 70 milliV, one of 100 and one of 130. What it comes out from your simulation is that at 70, you have a contact angle of around 90. And with 130, the droplet is completely wet on the graphene. So in this range of 60 milliV, that is small, that corresponds to 1.5 kilocalories, you have that the phenomenology is completely different. If you want to be predictive, you need an accuracy that is much higher. You need, say, at least 10 milliV in this interaction. And having 10 milliV in this kind of thing is difficult. I want to give you a feeling of how difficult it is. So let's simplify a little bit the system. Let's forget about the droplet. Just take a graphene sheet and a single water molecule. And we want to have to plot the interaction energy for this water molecule. Here, we can use density functional theory because it is the working horse of computational modeling, the first thing that you can take. But when you take density functional theory, you also need to decide the setup. In particular, you need to decide what is the exchange correlation functional, and in case if you want to add van der Waals in some way, how you introduce van der Waals. So say that you try different choices. With any different choice, you obtain a different curve. And as you can see here, I don't put label, but I mean, it's pretty clear. You can obtain everything from having zero binding to 160 milliliter volt binding. We are far away from the accuracy that we would need with density functional theory. And we don't know how to pick one of the many functional and tell that it is more accurate than others, unless we have a reference that is on a higher level. So we have to go to a higher level of theory. It is possible to go to an higher level of theory. There are theories that are more accurate of density functional theory. The price that you pay for going to something more accurate is the computational cost. In general, it works as a rule of thumb. The more accuracy that you want, the more you pay in terms of cost. Because nobody will use a method that is more expensive and less accurate, essentially. In this plot, so we have wave function methods that are more accurate than the DFT. There are many. But in the talk, I'm just going to discuss two of them, quantum Monte Carlo and coupled cluster. Mostly quantum Monte Carlo I'm going to discuss. You have to keep in mind that the cost from going to DFT to quantum Monte Carlo or coupled cluster, for instance, is easily 3, 4, or 5 orders of magnitude. So to have something more accurate, we have to use a lot more computational process. On the other hand, it works also in this other stuff. The force field are orders of magnitude cheaper than density functional theory, but for instance, in force field, you cannot tell what's the interaction between water or graphene if somebody don't tell you how it is. The thing that we also have to keep in mind is that we want to study large systems. And I told that we have to do long molecular dynamics simulation. How are we going to do that? Like, the cost that we can pay is only roughly the cost for force field. So on a hand, we want this accuracy. On the other hand, we want this cost. And that's where the magic happens, because there is the possibility to train machine learning potential on using the most accurate methods that you need, quantum Monte Carlo, coupled cluster, and use them to have a simulation as cheap as force fields. One of my ongoing projects is to do a machine learning potential for water interacting on graphene and train on diffusion Monte Carlo. Unfortunately, at now I cannot show results because it's still at the beginning of the project. But I'm going to discuss in this talk other features that are to prepare diffusion Monte Carlo to be good for providing the data to do the machine learning. And then I will show also some two applications where I will show how much the diffusion Monte Carlo can be useful sometimes, so also without the machine learning. So first of all, I open a methodological parenthesis where I discuss the diffusion Monte Carlo and some of the contribution that I gave to make it better for this kind of problems. Maybe many of you are already familiar with diffusion Monte Carlo, but I want to just tell what it is in a nutshell. It's a method that gives you the ground state of the electronics, of the wave function, by doing a propagation according to the imaginary time Schrödinger equation that projects out the x of the ground state, indeed. And this is how it does deliver the thing in practice. You obtain from a trial wave function as a number of configuration that we call them walkers. And we evolve the walkers in time according to the Green function that leads to a branching drift diffusion process where the steps are finite. There is a time step tau that is finite, and you evolve with time according to that. And at some point, this process gives a new distribution that can represent the exact ground state. So there are two phases in the simulation. The first phase is equilibration, where you do the project out of the ground state. And then there is the statistical sampling, because since you have a finite number of walkers, if you want that your stochastic error, the stochastic error, your prediction is small, you have to collect a lot of statistics. A key point here is that the size of the time step gives you the cost. In particular, the cost is 1 over the size, the 1 over the time step. Because, first of all, the equilibration will take more time to finish if the time step is smaller. But also, there is autocorrelation. And when you collect the statistics, you have to remove the autocorrelation. So you can account for that. There are some approximations, of course. So these are the four main approximations that there are. There is the fix and node approximation that is used to take the wave function fermionic. We use pseudo potential because they make the calculation cheaper, and we want to use large systems, but they of course introduce an approximation. Then there is the fact that the time step is finite, because the Green function that we can write is exact only if the time step would be infinitesimal, but it is not, so there is a discretization error. And then there are some modifications to the Green function that are made to enhance the stability, but they also can lead to approximations. So the first two points, fix and node and pseudo potential, in the system I am interested in are I've never seen them to be a problem, because there is almost perfect error cancellation. The time step, instead, is a crucial choice, because you have to balance accuracy and efficiency. And then there is the modification of Green function that they might lead to some issues, and an issue in particular that I'm going to discuss now. So There is a property, size consistency, that we would like to have when we use a method to predict interaction energies. The size consistency means that you describe correctly the fragmentation method. So say that you have a system with two subsystems, A and B, a water and a methane here, and you go to calculate their total energy. You want that the total energy when the subsystems are far away is the same as the sum of the energy for that you obtain by doing the system alone, by itself. And usually, having a method size consistent ultimately relies on the wave function ansatz. So a Slater determinant, if the fragments are closed shell, is size consistent, and so is a just correlated Slater determinant. This is the just correlated Slater determinant. The Slater determinant is the typical choice for the wave function when you do pixel node diffusion Monte Carlo. So we were very surprised when we discovered around 3 years ago that diffusion Monte Carlo is size inconsistent for finite time steps, whereas with the same wave function, the variational Monte Carlo is not size inconsistent, it's size consistent. And after some effort, we discovered that this was due to a modification to the Green function that was done to enhance the stability. In this, Sandro Sorella, one of the organizers, that spotted this issue in a conference. We told him the problem, and he told maybe it is the branching, and it is he was right. That was exactly the problem. So let me show you what is the problem. Maybe the slide is a little bit technical, but it will be only one. When you do this diffusion process, there are weights that are called branching factors, where essentially you have the exponential of minus tau, the local energy. And the local energy is something that, if your wave function is not exact, that never happens, it diverges close to the nodes. So the closer the configuration is to the node, the larger will be the local energy in absolute value. It goes like the distance to the node, the inverse to the distance to the node. And if the lattice energy becomes minus infinity, the wave becomes plus infinity. And that ruins your simulation. It explodes, so you cannot do anything, you cannot continue it anymore. So in order to deal with that, in the 1993, Ulrigar and co-workers essentially smoothed the branching factor in a way that was very good for make the simulation stable, but they didn't thought about the size consistency, and indeed with this smoothing, you become size inconsistent because your local energy cannot be written anymore as the sum of the subsystem if they are far away. So, having spotted the issue, we introduced a new method, a new way to deal with this divergence, something that in average is size consistent. And so we have a new algorithm. So here I'm going to show how the new algorithm performs with respect to the old one. The old one is in red, and the new one is in blue. And here, in the x-axis, you have the time step. So more accurate results are when the time step becomes small. And here I'm reporting the error on the binding energy for this specific system. You see that you need to go to tiny time steps with the old method in order to be accurate. Whereas with a new algorithm, you can use much, much larger time steps. This shows you not only that you have made a method that's size consistent with finite time step, but also that most of the time step error in this kind of binding energies was the size inconsistency. And that means that you have a crazy speed up what you are interested into are binding energies, because you can use a time step that is two orders of magnitude larger, so you are much more efficient. And if you go to consider larger system, the importance of the using the size-consistent version of diffusion Monte Carlo is even more important, because many times you are not even able to converse with the time step with the old method. And if the behavior is not linear, you cannot even extrapolate. Okay. Then there is another feature that is very important for us to do simulation of large system, because most of the times the large system we care about are periodic. But in quantum Monte Carlo, as well as in many other methods, if you do a periodic system, you can have finite size errors. And so here, to illustrate the issue of the finite size errors, let me take this system. This is a molecular crystal. There are four ammonia molecules in the primitive cell, and you have to imagine that to be repeated, so to have a periodic boundary conditions. And the quantity that we can be interested into is, for instance, the lattice energy, or if you want, the cohesive energy. That is the difference between the energy per molecule in the crystal minus the energies in open condition, that is, in the gas phase. And since this lattice energy is the difference between a calculation that is done in a periodic with periodic conditions and one in an open case, you will see all the finite size errors appearing when you go to see the lattice energy. So there are these finite size errors. Well, something is quite straightforward, because it is seen also in the DFT and in other methods, is that with periodicity you have to sample the Brillouin zone. In quantum Monte Carlo, we call that to use twist average boundary condition. That corrects for the independent particle finite size errors, but they are not all the errors. There are errors beyond this independent particle stuff, and they can be huge. So if the ammonia, in the ammonia, we know the lattice energy from the experiment is minus 37 kilojoule per mole. If we take the primitive cell, we correct for the independent particles finite size error, and we calculate the lattice energy. We have used Ewald periodicity in this. That's what we obtain, minus 115. That's the difference is huge. So that would make diffusion Monte Carlo, quantum Monte Carlo, because this is of quantum Monte Carlo, useless here. So how to have a better estimation? There is a brute force approach. We do supercells, 2 × 2 × 2, 3 × 3 × 3, and so on. And it works, meaning that you can be correct. So if this was the result with the primitive cell, and this is a larger supercell, and this one is an even larger supercell, you see that if you extrapolate, you go to converge to what is the correct lattice energy. But this way to deal with the finite size errors is extremely expensive, and we cannot afford in more interesting systems, because they are larger, and is already challenging to do the primitive cell many times. But we are lucky, because this kind of finite size errors are being known in the QMC community, and there are methods to correct them. So we test all of them, and we found that one of them, the model periodic Coulomb interaction, is very extremely good. Indeed, in this case, you see that already in the primitive cell, here in blue, it gives the correct lattice energy, and that's good. The thing that one has to care, to do carefully, is that you have to use the size-consistent method, because if you would go with the brute force approach, typically you can afford only a time step in the larger systems, because they are too expensive, and so people will be used to do the test of the time step on the smallest system, and say, for instance, here, I can do a time step that is 0.03, that seems to be pretty converged, and then they do the 2 × 2 × 2, but the error there is larger, and the 3 × 3 × 3, the error is even larger. And so there seems to be an indication that the finite size error correction were not working, but indeed is the time step error that is making all the thing not working. as you see here, with the right finite size error correction and the size consistent method, you have all the same values if you take the primitive cell over the larger supersets. And with that, I finish my methodological parenthesis. I have been working on other aspects of diffusion Monte Carlo, also a paper that I'm submitting these days. But I didn't want to go, I mean, to do the other stuff. I would have to be much more technical, and I didn't want, because I prefer to show also some applications. So I can say that in general, my efforts are going to try to make diffusion Monte Carlo more automatic, more automatic, so something that can be done even if you are not a QMC expert. And there are some predefined setup that would lead to quite accurate results. Because I think this is important both to make the method more widely used, but also to make it possible to use that for generating data for doing machine learning stuff. If the method would be automatic, that would be much easier to do benchmark of other electronic structure theories and also to do these machine learning potentials. And now I go to the applications. First application is molecular crystals. So first of all, let me convince you that it's worth to study them, like they are important. You can be interested in them for many reasons, but one very convincing reason is, for instance, that they constitute the majority of the market pharmaceuticals. So the application is interesting. I should mention that about molecular crystals, that the same molecule can arrange different, forming different crystals that are called polymorphs. These polymorphs can be very close in terms of by lattice energy, so stability, but have very different other properties, like dissolution rate or stability. So essentially, little changes in the environment can make a polymorph more stable than the other, but the little change will induce very big differences in the properties. If the lack of knowledge on some of the existence, for instance, of the polymorphs can have drastic consequences, and I can make an example about that, that actually happened, is the case of ritonavir, an HIV antiviral drug that was released in the market, industrially produced, and was in the form of capsules that were thought to have form one, the form that was investigated in the research department. But after the market release, they suddenly discovered there were another form, a form two. And the form two is slightly more stable than form one, that is indeed the metastable. But so there is a little barrier to cross. But essentially, every drug was converting from form one to form two. And the form two, despite being only slightly more stable, have a solubility that was much, much lower. That means that were inactive in the body. Around 2000. So after 2 years, they have to withdraw the drug and go back to reformulation. That was after that release again in the form of gel, but it was a very bad thing for the company. So the question is, can we avoid this thing to happen? A priori, can we tell before that there is another polymorph that is more stable? Well, in order to answer to this question or similar questions, one needs again very, very accurate results, subchemical accuracy, because the kind of difference in stability can be is many times smaller than 1 kilocalorie per mole. Which methods can deliver that? DFT, typical DFT, okay, is not. If you include van der Waals in some way, it is slightly better, but not, still not able to reach this accuracy. Couple cluster can be as accurate, but it's not affordable for the big pharmaceutical molecules that one is interested. And then there is QMC, and I want to persuade you that DMC is both accurate and affordable. And I can show you taking a representative set of 8 molecular crystals, and this set comprise diversity in the kind of intermolecular interactions. So we go from the strong hydrogen bonds of ice to London dispersion of benzene, naphthalene, and anthracene. And a method that is accurate in all these systems is very good, so it's very hard to be accurate in all of them. I've taken this data set because for them I have also the experimental lattice energy that I can compare with. And I need to spend a word on this experimental lattice energy because I defined what is the lattice energy. That is something that you compute. The experimentalists cannot see that this quantity directly. They have an indirect measure. They can measure the sublimation enthalpy. From the sublimation enthalpy, if you take into account of the quantum nuclear effects and the temperature effects, you can go back to the lattice energy. But one has also to consider that both the experimental measure of the sublimation enthalpy and also this term that goes from sublimation enthalpy to lattice energy have an uncertainty. And so without going too much on the details, you have to trust me that the kind of uncertainty in the experimental lattice energy of the, is of the order of 1 kilocalorie per mole. So in this plot, I am consider the 8 molecular crystals in my data set, and I report in the difference between the lattice energy that I compute and the lattice energy that I have from experiments. And the gray area is represents the kind of experimental uncertainty. So if I fall into this region, I'm happy, and I cannot speculate if something is here rather than here because, like, that's beyond the precision. The quantum Monte Carlo, if I use a big supercell, so the brute force approach, is outstanding. It's always in the right region. And so is quantum Monte Carlo if I use small cells and I rely on the finite size corrections. For some of the system, not all, there is also the couple cluster that is, again, in pretty good agreement. But we have not the value for the naphthalene and anthracene because these systems are too large. They cannot afford them. Even the benzene calculation was a natural, like just to give an idea of the kind of effort it requires to give that. And also show you that, like, it's not easy. I'm reporting here other methods like MP2. MP2 fails in 3 of the 8 system. RPA essentially underbind all of the system. A method is useful as long as it's accurate and affordable. And so let's see how much it costs. Diffusion Monte Carlo with the large cells has this cost. And in gray here, you see what you could do with one day of simulation in a typical cluster that we have at the universities. So most of the calculation requires much more than that because here the scale is logarithmic. But if I use small cell, I have always at least one order of magnitude improvement in terms of the cost, and there are many crystals that fall into the region of one day of simulation. RPA, as a comparison, is as roughly the same cost of diffusion Monte Carlo with a small cell. So it's definitely feasible. I don't want to talk about that because this finished my part of machine learning of molecular crystal. I think I persuaded you that QMC is promising for this kind of system, and I'm willing to go further in that kind of studies. And then my last application is water on graphene. So again, the system that I discussed at the beginning. I think that the system were already motivated. So here we have graphene and warm water molecule. And here I've reported some results that were claimed to be state of the art. They are not more than 10 years old. And this is the kind of binding energy they report. Since the system, if you go to wave function-based method, is huge, none of them could afford couple cluster as it is. They always had to do couple cluster and something else to correct at some point. So, and also there is a diffusion Monte Carlo calculation that was done by my colleagues, but very much a lot of time ago, before the improvements that I've shown you earlier. And essentially, without going too much in the details, we know a priori that all these measures have the weak points. And so we want to recalculate the binding energy, again with diffusion Monte Carlo, but the improved diffusion Monte Carlo that we have this day. And so now we consider not only one orientation, but three different orientations of waters on top of graphene, and then we want to calculate the binding curve, that is this one. And we obtain a new value for this configuration that we call two-leg, because it has two hydrogen points in toward the graphene sheet. And the value is around 100 milliV. The interesting thing is also that the other configurations are roughly the same kind of binding energy. And that is interesting if you think about the property of water molecules to diffuse very fast, almost barrierless on graphene, because essentially it doesn't matter how you turn them, they are always at the same, they have no barriers. Okay, we have this new reference, and now we try to understand why the other methods were not so accurate. So the diffusion, the old diffusion Monte Carlo, that was easy. There were no final size error considered, and the algorithm was size inconsistent. But that is the reason why it was not so good. Two values were relying on a high-level calculation of smaller system, and then a correction, an extrapolated correction on larger system. The smaller system, where they had the high level, were interaction with the benzene and something larger than benzene, naphthalene, anthracene. Here we made ourselves something even larger than what they consider, that is coronene, and we made new binding curves, and we also calculated the couple cluster. And we have an outstanding agreement between diffusion Monte Carlo and couple cluster. So it's not a disagreement between diffusion Monte Carlo and couple cluster the source of the disagreement in this value, for instance. But what it is likely the source is that they essentially have binding energies here and maybe here. Okay, here I'm reporting the binding energy of a system where the I'm reporting here the value as 1 over the substrate radius, like. And they would have binding energies here, and they are trying to extrapolate what's happening over there. That's not easy if you are so much far away. There is another measure here where they used a quite larger system, but they use a tiny Bayesian set. So there is likely that the error comes from the Bayesian set. And with that, we are very confident about our new value. Moreover, we had finally a further confirmation with other two methods that are seem to be reliable: random phase approximation with the GW single energy correction, predicts almost the same as quantum Monte Carlo, and there is a very recent implementation of coupled cluster with the periodic boundary conditions. They study a slightly smaller system than what we did, but the result is in agreement with us within the kind of uncertainty that you have, because the system is slightly smaller. And having all that, we can go back and benchmark DFT and highlight if there is a functional that is very good. This in the perspective of doing the machine learned potential, because if we if We have a DFT functional that is good. We can use that to produce more geometries for the training. But unless there is something really interesting in the benchmarking of DFT, I'm not going to give much more details. So let me conclude. So we have seen, like I tried to show you, like how the theoretical modeling is important, especially when you have to complement what the insight that you have from experiments. That diffusion Monte Carlo is very promising, is able to deliver high accuracy, and if one make wise choices, it's not so expensive, at least in some cases. Well, there is the hope that we are able to then do this machine learning potential in future. In this work, in the results that I showed, I have many contributions for colleagues. First of all, there are my colleagues in London, Angelos Michalidis and Dario Alfe, where I work. I work on their groups. There is Gerrit Brandenburg that now, unfortunately, recently went to the industry, but he made all the couple cluster calculation, most of the couple cluster calculation that I showed you. Then we are collaborators for Vienna, the group of Georg Kresse and of Andrea Grunis. These are related with water on graphene stuff. And then other collaboration, of course, there is Sandro Sorella, with whom I am always in contact to try to improve quantum Monte Carlo. And connected to molecular crystals, there are other guys were involved, Ji Chen, Giri Klimes, and Alexandre Tachenko. And with that, I finish the scientific part of the presentation, but I need to show yet another slide. Because, in the group of London, it's become sort of a tradition that every year we do a triathlon relay competition. So different members of the group has a different part on the relay. And as I'm always, I'm also involved, I'm going to do the swim, I have also to advertise, because we are also raising funds in the spirit of these events for Water ID. That is an international charity working to provide clean water everywhere. And I just put here the link in case anybody would feel happy if I contribute. Finished. Sorry? No, I didn't hear. Because the guy didn't give his picture. but they are similar, so it was a joke.
Okay, a question?
So actually, I have quick questions. The first question is, how do you predict whether your potential energy landscapes has minima? How do you predict in DMC whether your potential energy landscape has many minima, that you have other configurations that may be stable?
Yeah, there can be many minima, but on graphene it's easier. There are not many minima, especially there are those three minima, water on graphene.
No, I'm talking generically, like if you showed this kind of molecule with the medicine from eight, and you show that the company didn't know that there was more stable minima with different configuration.
I didn't get the...
So you had a plot where you were showing that there's this company that made this...
Where was this plot? At the beginning? Or?
At the beginning, yes. Oh, yeah, come on. This one. So the minima on the left, they didn't know it.
Oh, well, this plot actually is a cartoon. It's not really a plot that we made. It's just to give the idea. These are not proper results. It's just we draw the curve to illustrate the point. You mean this curve?
Yeah, so my point is that you have another configuration that has lower energy that is more stable. but they are, but they didn't know it as far as I, and they are prepared instead.
Form two is more stable. This one is more stable. Is lower in the, as a lower lattice energy.
Yeah, my second question was about this machine learning potentials. So yeah. Do you intend to use it like as guiding wave function in the DMC calculations?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. I didn't give details about the potential because I have nothing to show, so.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. We now have a coffee break until 10:45.